Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. I don't know about you, but we are finally getting to a point where we're hitting a cold snap. It rained basically all through Christmas, Christmas night, the next day, mid-50s. It didn't even get down below like 46 the last couple of nights. But we're now hitting a point where the weather app says it's going to be getting down to as 11 degrees, 15 degrees for at least a couple of nights before it starts to come back up again. We may even have a day of snow or two. But every day does have highs after the weekend for me. So in 4 or 5 days, every day is higher than 40 degrees again, so it will likely all melt. Anyway, I know I've been talking about the weather a lot on here, but man, it is weird. I've also heard that it's kind of out of whack for the Southern Hemisphere, especially in Australia, where it is supposed to be the hottest time of year. It's summer there, and they are experiencing some record cold temperatures. Going to be really fascinating to see what happens with snow in this part of the world. I'm in the Intermountain West, Rocky Mountain area, and it just, there isn't any. This is a big year, too, for water needs in the West with the Colorado River shrinking, with snowpacks shrinking, with the levels of Lake Mead and Lake Powell continuing to get closer and closer to those minimum power pools and eventually Deadpool. This is a very crucial decade for the Western United States and the 40-plus million people who rely on the Colorado. So we'll be keeping a close eye on that throughout the winter and throughout next spring and summer to kind of see where all that shakes out. I think I might have mentioned on here, I've got as part of my bingo guess, this is a long-shot prediction because at least according to the researchers, they say there's less than a 1% chance of hitting minimum power pool this year in either. As we go into the next, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, those chances tick up pretty rapidly. This year there's supposed to be a 0% chance or 1% chance. So I said, well, why not? This will be the year we'll have a really bad winter, low snowpack, high evaporation, and hit minimum power pool in at least one of those lakes. I hope I'm wrong. With all things collapse predictions, I hope I'm wrong. And really, with all things collapse conversation, I hope the whole thing's wrong. I hope to find out that we've been wasting our time here and that I die at a ripe old age of 80. I don't know if I want to live past 80 either way, unless medical advancements are such that my body is in tip-top shape at that age. Anyway, yeah. On that note, I am kind of excited to see how my view of collapse changes as time goes on. I think that it already has changed pretty significantly. And in some ways, especially in that the scope of what may happen or the type of collapse we may experience is widening. You know, I start to realize that some systems may persist longer than others. I think I've always assumed up to this point that a financial collapse, or at least a collapse of the financial system, was a given. And I still think that it's likely. But at the same time, you know, recognizing that late stage capitalism may cling on for as long as possible and maybe longer than anticipated. It may turn out that when we talk about access to infrastructure and continued access to food and clean water and all those things, that, you know, I'd always kind of pictured it collapsing for everyone or most everyone, and that early on, the dollar may disappear and may not be worth anything, or just fiat currency in general. And that leaves everyone sort of equally as in trouble, except for really the top 1%, top 0.1% or whatever, that have built out for themselves infrastructure that they can utilize. And I still very much think that that's a possibility. But also part of me is kind of realizing that there's a chance that collapse the way that we talk about it may be a collapse of the bottom 80% or the bottom 90% of income or wealth holders, right? That access to food is not going to just completely disappear. It's not like supply chains will break down and then no one will have access to food ever again. It's more likely that supply chains will break down. Incoming food is more sparse, right? Or access to electricity or to clean water. Those things are still available, but just at such an extreme cost that you have to be in the top, however much of wealth, to be able to continue to enjoy it. I know that's not that big of a change in the way that many view collapse. I think my view has just expanded on the fact that that may remain the case for a longer period of time than I had assumed. Obviously, things will just continue to get more expensive. That's always been known. And the more money you have, the more you can absorb those changes in costs. But I think I just always figured that it would eventually and rather quickly all implode until it didn't really matter how much money you had because your money wasn't worth anything anymore, whether that's through hyperinflation, collapse of the financial system, collapse of our institutions that keep the numbers on, you know, digitally in the screen to tell us how much money we have, those types of things. But that may very well not be the case. Anyway, I'm rambling here. I guess the point is, a lot of people ask, I see it in the collapse subreddit, or I get asked this question, what are you doing as far as planning for the future financially? Are you putting money into your 401k? Is it even worth investing in any way at all? And when you look at those threads or read what people say, some say no, not at all. It's a waste of time. Life is short. Investing is a waste of money. Spend it now. Enjoy your life now. I view investing more as a insurance policy, perhaps. It might not be like my number one priority with my money when we talk about investing in stocks or a 401k or something like that. But I don't want to be hitting 60 years old or 70 years old and looking around and going, holy crap, collapse is here and we're in the process, but it's taking longer than expected. And boy, I sure wish that I had money to retire on now, but instead I'm going to work until I'm 90 and die. Or on the other hand, collapse has happened. It has happened intensely for those who don't have money in the bank or have money in stocks or whatever. It would suck to be in that 80% that is experiencing collapse at its fullest. It's also a weird, like, moral position to not be in that 80%, to be in the 20% who's doing okay and getting by, but watching as, like, the rest of the world suffers and collapses. It's all very weird and hard to understand and think about because we can't tell the future. I just know that capitalism will exist as long as it possibly can. And while other things may fail, while other things may fall apart, those in power will do everything to keep the power that they have. And in order to do that, the financial system has to stay solvent. And there's that saying, something like the economy or the financial system will stay irrational longer than we can stay solvent. And how long that actually is really one of the big questions, of course. For some people, for many people, putting any money away into an investment, into a 401k, is not even an option. Maybe their job doesn't offer any sort of match, or maybe for people living really paycheck to paycheck with no extra income, no expendable income at all, that could be too much to ask. But in all things, the best possible strategy is to diversify, if possible, to put some money away, but also to be able to try and invest in contingencies for more rapid collapse, right? For education, for practice and skills and knowledge, investments in resilience in your community, in networking, in building relationships, etc. Anyway, yeah, I'm going to stop rambling on that there. Some things I have been thinking about. All right, let's jump in and talk for a few minutes about episode 7. This was on politics. First thing I noticed as I listened back through this and that made me chuckle is that me and Kel made very clear this is not a political podcast. We're not here to make our politics known. It may come out later. And yeah, it certainly did. Since Kellen left the podcast, I have been very vocal about my own political thoughts. Hopefully that hasn't been, a negative in the podcast. Hopefully I haven't lost any listeners because of it. But at the same time, like, we're living now in a time where I don't feel it's excusable to talk about collapse and not talk about specifically the people in power who are working to make it worse. Now, obviously, when it comes to politics, it's not just about left versus right, or in the U.S., Democrats versus Republicans, because while the conservative movement currently is, yes, much more authoritarian and fascist, it's more cruel, reckless, et cetera, the Democratic Party is still a neoliberal institution that is taking us closer to collapse. so many Americans view it as this perfect party and, you know, if only we'll get a Democrat president, then we'll be saved and everything will be okay. But those people are not looking at things from a macro scale and understanding the damage of capitalism and neoliberalism, especially. Because in the end, people are focusing way too much on sort of macro issues. It's not that those macro issues aren't important, but when politics becomes about culture and less about really defining who has the power, where the power is coming from, and the systemic issues, the direction that society as a whole is headed because of those powers, it can serve as a distraction. Now, again, that is not to say that we should not demand human rights. That is not to say that wrongs should be righted, right? It's just that we're in a system where all of the focus has to be put into making those things happen, which is so messed up. They should be givens, right? We should not have to fight for human rights. But while we are busy fighting for those things, it is like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, like they say, because we have sort of just acquiesced to, in this case, neoliberalism and the direction that it takes us. I do appreciate that about episode 7, that, you know, we didn't talk about the minutiae of current politics. We didn't talk about left versus right. We didn't really talk about what you might think of when you hear the word politics. What we talked about in that episode was power, how power comes about, how someone claims and holds on to power, whether that be in a democratic institution or authoritarian. We talked about the infrastructure that's required in the capital, the maintenance cost of that capital to keep that power. And that's not necessarily just talking about one individual, right? We talk about keeping and holding power. That's not just talking about whoever the president of the United States is keeping and holding power. It's more about the institutions. It's more about the elite hold on power, for example. We talk about the requirement for this sacred aura of the center, this ability to have the masses think of our political institutions in almost a respectful, religious sort of way. That if people maintain that, then power can be maintained quite easily. That as that starts to slip, it has to be maintained through other ways. Power has to tighten its grip. It has to become more manipulative. It has to pit one side against the other and convince people that they are keeping whoever in power in order to beat the enemy, to beat the other side, to win in the cultural war. And we find ourselves in the midst of that. We talked about how the risks eventually become that power gets lost because people A, see through the facade, or B, become so desperate that they're willing to give up the authority that they lend the leaders in order to have a more stable system. How that can come through revolution, how that can come through civil war, how that can come through invasion. As powerful as our institutions are, they will never be as powerful as the whole of the people combined. And we've seen throughout history, time and time again, how that power slips away and is eventually replaced by another. From a collapse perspective, having a steady world, a steady economy, steady geopolitics is important to keeping the machine, the system as we know it, continuing to move and continuing to function. If there is a breakdown in power, whether that's in a nation or in the world as a whole, that can cause a chaos large enough to fracture the systems required to keep things functioning, especially when you rely on your government more and more over time to provide the basic necessities that you need for life. It is a blessing and a curse to have your government help you. It's a wonderful safety net. But when those systems are disrupted and suddenly your safety net is gone, one that perhaps you as a person or you as a nation have relied on so fully, it is a domino effect of other systems that rely on those systems that cause a cascading collapse in infrastructure and in the availability of those things that give us and maintain our lives. So in the end, that episode, I feel more was about stability, was more about power than it was about the way that the average person thinks about politics. And I myself get caught up in the day-to-day of our politics, in the actions that our president takes here in the U.S., in the ridiculous threats and Truth Social posts and rhetoric and the actions, right? It's hard not to, but I think it's important to remember that at its core, politics is about more than that. And while those things, those the minutiae, the micro details of what's happening in politics can affect our day-to-day and can affect the trajectory of many people's lives, especially minorities and those who are being targeted. But that at the same time, the macro of politics, what's happening behind the scenes in regards to the effect that power has on stability, and that every day that our system takes another step towards collapse, as economic stability, as climate change, as food insecurity, as all of these things increase, it threatens the already fragile power that our institutions have. All right, we are just one episode away from tidying up this sort of recap on the first 8 episodes. It's been really fun to look back at them. I look forward to taking a look at climate change again and, you know, maybe some of the numbers that we presented and how those types of things have changed and maybe how my outlook has changed since that episode. And from there, we will go back into exploring new research, new findings, and just new happenings on the front of collapse. Thanks for joining me today. We'll see you tomorrow. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.